there. Thanks for coming. Take a seat.
It's time to retire to the drawing room.
Just like life, not all art is beautiful. Art is a reflection of both the beauty and the ugliness of life, the good and the bad. But at what point does an exploration of ugliness become too much for the consumer to bear? Hanya Yanigihara is the author of A Little Life, a book which has won accolades around the globe and forces the reader to dwell in some very dark and some very ugly places. She joins me along with spoken word artist Shane Khoisan, who also deals with dark themes in his work. Thank you to both of you for coming in. Hanya, your book is quite a read. It's brilliantly crafted, but it's kind of really difficult terrain for many people. I won't give too much away, but it does deal with themes of child abuse and lots of violence. Was it difficult to write?
Not really. I mean, it was insofar as, you know, if you're not suffering alongside your characters, then you've basically become a sadistic author. So in that sense, in the sense of a human experiencing empathy for another human, even an invented human, it was difficult. But it was an easy book to write because I knew exactly where I was going with it. And I knew this character very well. I knew how his life would unfold. And I knew the sort of twists and turns it would take.
How do you decide what's gratuitous and what's not?
I think if you're making a book violent or pushing it to its extremes only so you can test the boundaries of what the form can bear, or only to elicit a reaction, then I think you are creating pornography of one sort. But if you're doing it because you want to engender empathy among your readers, if you want to make it become the beginning of a conversation about what it means to be alive and what it means to be exposed to other lives that you can't imagine, then I think it's well used, and not only well used, but necessarily used sometimes.
So does that mean through the writing process, that's a question you have to continuously, consistently ask yourself as you make decisions about where you're taking the characters next?
No, I think it's something that you should have fundamentally sorted before you even begin writing. You know, if your attitude towards including violence in a book is because, again, you have some sort of greater intent or you want to start some sort of greater conversation, then that's something you should know from the beginning. And it's not something that can sort of be changed midstream. You can't have a book that, you know, is just provocative, you know, 30% of the way through and then starts asking for some sort of greater engagement. But I think it is about the intention with which you use violence and what you hope results from taking the reader to a place that's uncomfortable.
Shane, you also write and speak about some pretty dark themes. How do you decide what to reveal, what to keep? Is there any corner of your heart that you keep hidden somewhere under your bed, somewhere, you know, under the pillow?
Yeah, there are things that I don't bring onto stage with me for sure. I try to treat a lot of, you know, what I do in terms of performance or presentation as, you know, being the curator and sort of a gallery, and here are the pieces that I'm choosing to show people, and I take people around and I tell them about those pieces. And I do go to some pretty dark places because that's been my life. But there's also levity in that. Levity is how I've learned to combat a lot of that stuff. You know, May 6th marks the 5-year anniversary of me being off of antidepressants and mood stabilizers, but it's still like every day is still a challenge. I think, you know, I'm able to achieve balance because of the people I've chosen to lean on in my life, and they've helped me out greatly in that regard.
Hanya, as we were talking about, it's been criticized by some, your work, for being too violent. Some have argued that you kind of should have spared the reader. But does the author owe the reader anything? Do books like yours need to come with better warnings? I wonder what the process has to be in that kind of relationship.
I think a writer's job, and her only job, is to tell a story, and to tell a story about other lives, and some lives are terrifically violent. And for fiction not to go into those territories because it might be upsetting for some is a failure of not only literature but of the imagination. I think that this idea that there are certain things that a reader can't bear is a ridiculous argument. A reader can bear anything, and a reader wants to be taken to places often that they don't know that they want to go. I think where a writer comes into difficulty is by trying to second guess what her audience can take. And it's a fundamentally patronizing way to think about your reader. As a reader myself, I don't want to be thought of as someone whose sensibilities might be offended or who can't withstand the rigors of another life. So I think that the writer's only responsibility to her reader is that she can create a complete logical universe, and within that universe, things are wholly imagined, and that there's a sort of fearlessness to where the reader, to where the writer wants to take her reader, but also a sense that the reader knows that she's in hands that are authoritative. And beyond that, I don't think that there is anything that a reader can't take.
Shane, do you agree with that? What is the contract with the audience or the reader? Is there one at all? Does there have to be one?
I don't think there has to be one. A lot of the times, you know, anybody who's willing to pick up your book, or anybody who's willing to listen to your work, you know, like, I mean, they're taking a risk. It's not like, you know, renting a movie from a video store and then going back and saying, you know, I didn't like this movie, so I want my money back. They don't do that in real life. And a lot of the times, you know, an author is, when you walk out onto stage or when you're writing, you're opening a vein for a lot of you, like in front of a lot of people. And if they're not willing to sort of stand there and see that, then it's, you know, they're not obligated. They can put the book down at any time. They can walk out of the show at any time. You know, it's, if it offends their sensibilities or if they're unable to take it, then, you know, we're not telling them you don't have permission to leave this. You know, it's up to you if you want to stay there. You have a choice as well.
Why do you think we have such trouble as a culture with dealing with that kind of ugliness? That so many of our lives have had chapters, or some very fully have been full of this kind of ugliness, and yet we still, I suppose, in a way, find it very difficult to explore it. Hanya, is that a contradiction, or is it because we just find it too painful?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, we're living at a point in history in which we have greater access to violence and to other kinds of lives than ever before, thanks to the internet. And yet at the same time, in many countries, Australia and in the States, of course, we are further removed from death and from difficult circumstances than ever before. And so while this idea of violence that happens in the everyday, whether it's in Syria or in our, you know, our next door neighbor's apartment, is something that we understand as an abstraction, very few of us have ever seen a dead body. Very few of us have ever seen death in the way that death is realized in many countries that don't have the advantages that our countries have. And so it is something that we have begun to become sort of cottoned to. And that's a very dangerous way to live. And you can see how it affects our policies and how it affects even how we look at someone else on the street whose life might be unreadable or unbearable to us. And it is art's job to take us back to those places and remind us that even though we can choose not to look, there is a whole sphere of lives that are being lived in unbearable ways often.
You're in the Drawing Room, and my guests are Hanya Yana Gihara. She's an author, and Shane Khoisan, he's a spoken word artist. We're exploring, well, books and art that go into difficult or painful areas that I suppose press people's buttons. Hanya, you said before that you knew the main character very well of your book. How did you know this person?
You know, I'm not really sure, and it's such an unsatisfying answer, but no, it's okay. I originally wanted to write a character who just never got better and who defied this idea that we hold dear in many countries that if you try hard enough, that happiness is within your reach and that people are irreparable and that people can be fixed. And that's simply not true, and we're very unkind to people who seem to disprove or disrupt that narrative that we tell ourselves. And so I thought, what would it be like to create somebody who tries and really isn't able to get better? And what would the reader think for him and about him? And what would be the narrative tension to someone who just isn't able to improve? And what would be the momentum of such a story?
Shane, would you agree? Are we too focused on kind of pop psychology or band-aid solutions to say, hey, be happy, get over it all the time, and not to actually allow people to experience life as they see it?
Yeah, I would totally agree with Hanya on that. I think, you know, a lot of us, you know, we tend to heal at the source, and the source is often a place of pain or great darkness. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times when you're, I know for a lot of my friends, a lot of my family, I found out very quickly who the ones who were willing to stick around for it and who are the ones are that are still dealing with, you know, the fallout of, you know, when I do fall into a depression. There are people that love to be around somebody that's, you know, successful, but they don't want to be around that person when they're still struggling with all the things they're still struggling with. And I totally agree in the sense that there are a ton of people out there right now who they're fighting as hard as they can, but they're not necessarily achieving great success in that struggle. It doesn't diminish the value of that struggle. It doesn't diminish, you know, the work it takes to do that. But it's hard when the world looks at the sort of Rocky mentality of, you know, you got to fight and you're going to win eventually. You don't always, you know. For me, every day is still a fight. It's still a struggle. I don't see there being a finish line to what I'm doing. So in that sense, yeah, I completely agree.
Shane, some of your spoken word pieces are, I think, set to music. Mm-hmm. When does spoken word become singing or even rap? How does that, can you explain how that works for you?
Well, I don't sing and I don't rap, so I don't know about that. But I know, right? if only I could be making millions.
Kanye West.
Yeah. I grew up loving cinema. Cinema was the great escape for me. I didn't have any friends growing up, got bullied a lot. And so I learned to love going to the movies by myself. And because of that, I think I fell in love with sort of the idea of the way... What music can do to a movie. Music is kind of an emotional lubricant for a lot of people. It helps them get to darker places a little bit easier. It's more accepting. And it was that same idea that I applied to, you know, sort of poetry and spoken word. At first, to sort of bring in an audience, because a lot of times people hear the word poetry and they're like, oh my God, I need to run in the other direction. And so music gave people that sort of like, okay, well, even if I don't appreciate the words, I can still appreciate the beauty of the music. And for me, when I write a piece and when we write a piece musically together, we're treating it like a film. We're scoring it like a film. We're not doing it as a traditional sort of rock and roll song where it's verse, chorus type of thing. We're treating it like here's a story that's being scored, much the same way a film is scored. And I've had a great deal of success doing that. And I think it helps a lot of people too in terms of them being able to open up that emotional space that a lot of the times, you know, we live in this world where people are constantly being told, you know, if you're having an emotional day, shut it down, go home. We don't want to see you at work. If you're having a bad day, they send you home. And we're forgetting that we're emotional creatures. And we're now living in this world where that's being told to be shut off. And what I do with my work and my shows is try to remind people this is a safe space for you to feel, because that's actually what you're supposed to be doing. You shouldn't be shutting all of this down. You shouldn't be bottling all of this up. I know what it's like to bottle all that up. You know, you're living like a magic damp with inner demons like genies waiting to be set free when you're rubbed the wrong way. It's not a good place to be living or existing. And so we need that emotional release constantly, as dark as it can be sometimes.
Hanya, what do you do when you have a bad day? Is writing where you go to? Is that your response?
No, I mean, I find what Shane's saying really interesting, actually, because I think he's absolutely right. And most of us are just taught to bury it as deep as possible. And I was thinking what I would do at work if everyone came in and felt their feelings. I mean, long term, it would probably be better. In the short term, though, it's very uncomfortable. And I think that you know, when I have a bad day, I guess I do just sort of suppress it and try to move on. But Shane's making me think maybe I shouldn't. I'm sure my friends would be so happy as I start acting out on them.
You've both been fantastic guests. Thank you so much for coming into the drawing room and having this conversation with me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Patricia.
And that's Hanya Yanagihara. She's my guest and she is here for the Sydney Writers' Festival, and her book, A Little Life, is out now. And also Shane Khoisan, he's performing in Sydney and Melbourne this weekend, but if you head to his website, you can find lots of great listening material as well.